Two of the biggest technology news items this year involved Google's battle with Apple over map and GPS applications for the iPhone, and new tablet releases from Google, Microsoft, and Apple. Apps and tablets go hand in hand. And of course, in the global marketplace, battles ensue. I'm Jabalani Lafall, and on today's Central Standard, the Computer Guys drop by to play technological war correspondents of sorts as they discuss the battles for supremacy among tech giants such as Google, Microsoft, and Apple in the highly competitive world of mobile apps and the tablets that we use to access those apps. Kansas City, we want to find out what types of apps and tablets you use and why. That plus the Technology News Lightning Round, where we discuss the latest items and quirky happenings in the tech world. That's coming up on Central Standard after this hour's NPR News. Good morning, Kansas City. We're close to moving past the "there's an app for that" era and into an integrated, seamless mobile world, where people now need a reason for apps. Developers need to make their case for app use. And this leaves consumers to choose which platform they will use for access, and leaves technology companies vying for your attention on all platforms. This is Central Standard. I'm Jabalani Lafall. Today we discuss what developers will need to separate themselves from the more than 700,000 mobile apps in circulation, and which tablets stack up best as the modern and emerging staple of computing in the iPad, Android, Windows, mobile tablet wars. And we would like to know today what tablets you use. Joining us once again are the Computer Guys, Apple consultant George Costello, and Thomas O'Brien, an enterprise IT consultant and CEO of Ideology. Welcome to the show, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Hello.
Let's start out with what's at stake in the computing industry right now as we go into the last few weeks of 2012. Where does app development and tablets stand in this ongoing evolution, Tom?
Well, tablets are just a total phenomenon in terms of computing devices. For years, the PC was the standard bearer, and you still ship about 80 million PCs a quarter. However, tablets are gaining huge amounts of market share. They're number one on almost everybody's list. And they represent, I think, what we would call is a sea change in the way people view a computing device.
A seed change.
Sea change.
S-E-A.
C.
Like a title change.
Like a title change.
Yeah, that kind of thing.
S-E-A.
Right. Now, So the other thing is about apps, though, this is not new. This, you know, whenever you have a new platform or a new device, that drives developers to develop applications for it. So when the PC first came out, there was a huge growth in the number of applications available for it, very similar to what we see now, only on just a bigger scale now.
George, the iPad is sort of the standard bearer. So how does that change the game in terms of tablet evolution and app?
Well, evolution? It changed the game because it was the first tablet. You know, and I personally have always maintained that as computers have gotten more complex over the years, that the average user, you know, just the ordinary person who knows how to turn them on and do basic stuff with them, found it increasingly difficult to use some of the applications. I mean, you look at a copy of Microsoft Word, for example, from 2001, and you look at the same application today, and it is far more complex and intimidating to somebody who's not a professional who uses it every day. And that's the appeal of tablets, because the apps that are on a tablet are so small, so simple, so intuitive, so easy to understand and use that ordinary people took right to it.
And that leads us to an interesting question. As the heavy hitters in technology find a way to integrate apps into their products in a more user-friendly way and also inevitably in a more profitable way, what does that mean, Tom, for the way tablets will be used?
There's kind of two ways to look at that, I think. One is the control of the platform by the big tech company. So Kindle, Amazon's Kindle or Barnes & Noble's Nook, those e-readers/tablets, those have a lot of content and that is directed right back at those companies. They try to keep them within their ecosystem. Similarly with the Google Chromebook or with the Google Nexus tablets, most of them are set up to just, you know, do the Google stuff. Same thing with the iPad. Although with iPad and iPhone, it's a little different because Google actually has more number one apps on those platforms than Apple does.
Apps have been known for smartphones, and before that, computers, and before applications became quote-unquote apps. But with the integration and syncing capabilities via cloud computing between desktops, laptops, and smartphones now, how are people typically using these apps on tablets, George?
Well, I guess it depends on what apps they downloaded. I mean, obviously, you're going to pull down stuff that's of interest to you. So it depends on the individual. I mean, if you're somebody who likes to listen to a lot of music, well, you've probably got Pandora and maybe Spotify and a few other apps like that that cater to your needs.
It does depend on your personal taste for apps.
Right.
Yet we have 700,000 apps in circulation.
More than that.
And most of those aren't downloaded. Why is that? Is it about placement, utility, marketing? What's the deal?
All three. Yeah. You just said it right there. They're dominated by the companies that have the deepest pockets, the fastest to market, the best developers. They have integrated themselves so well with the operating system because they probably invented it, like Apple and Google both invented their own operating system platforms, that they get to market quicker and they dominate completely. I mean, if you really look at app downloads, those are the two companies that completely dominate on the tablet and smartphone platforms. After that, and by the way, there's over 1 million on the App Store for Apple.
Alone.
And there's over 700,000 on Google Play.
Right.
So that's closing in on 2 million apps. Now, how many of those are unique? Well, maybe not all that many. There might be 100,000 unique apps. There's a lot of copycats. You know, when you go to look for an app and you on your phone or your tablet, you know you have a choice of 8, 10, sometimes 20. In fact, most of us don't even look at page 30.
Yeah.
You know, and we just download whatever the first one or two that we see are that like have 5 stars or something like that.
So you're saying instead of Angry Birds, somebody put out Chagrined Birds.
Yeah. Or Mildly Annoyed Birds.
Right.
Yeah, that
right.
kind of thing.
Right. So how do new developers and existing developers separate themselves from the pack?
Well, I would say that you've got to have a really good idea. You know, you've got to have something that is unique and is going to catch the public's fancy. I mean, it's no different than a hit tune or, you know, a book that goes to number one. When you look at all the apps that are in the App Store, I mean, it's really no different than walking into a library. You know, I mean, I don't know how many books there are in the average library, but you couldn't possibly know about all of them. So you need an intermediary many times to guide you. And those come in the form of other people or other publications or whatever who would pick, say, the 10 best apps of 2012.
But one might say, George, that the analogy to walking into a library, one who walks into a library usually, more often than not, knows what they're there to check out and goes to the card catalog to look at that specific thing, card catalog. I'm dating myself a little bit.
Well, that's
true,
though.
Goes to the information desk to know what they look for. And
right.
then you're holding this device in your hand, and you know what you want to do, but you may not know what you're looking for and what app is right for you, particularly on a particular tablet.
That's true. That's why there are some apps that have been
apps, right?
that have been developed to help you find other apps. Two of the best known really are App Shopper and App Advice, which anyone can download and use as an assistant, perhaps. Although, you know, now that you mentioned that, I hadn't thought about this, but I suppose you could ask Siri.
If Siri will even give you an answer.
Yeah.
Siri, of course, is the voice-operated
right.
Apple voice-operated
assistant.
Intelligent assistant.
Intelligent
yes.
assistant.
And
right.
by the way, Google has a similar
they do.
Thing now on Jelly Bean, their newest operating system called Google Now. and it's very similar to Siri. In fact, there's a pretty funny video around comparing the two that you can find on the net. But, you know, when you think about it, the problem of a person, a user like us, trying to find an app is very, very similar to the problem of the developer trying to get his app or her app noticed. And so, you know, curation is one way, but there's some very interesting and kind of different ways that that happens too. Like, for instance, in this very town, every Wednesday, there's a meeting of a group called A Million Cups.
Right, the coffee thing, Foundation.
And right. they feature a couple of startups that are a lot of times those are apps, you know, every week. And there are competitions. There are all sorts of different kind of unique and interesting ways that people can get their app out in the public eye.
That's something we'll be covering soon here on Central Standard. We have a pretty good relationship with the Kauffman Foundation and a lot of the app developers here in what is known as sort of the epicenter of the regional app developers. And
oh, it's really cool.
Very proud of that here in Kansas City. George, though, historically, Apple has had a barrier to entry on its app store. How has that changed? Has it changed at all in a new way?
Did you say a barrier?
A barrier to entry, a sort of clearance period.
You know, that's you can look at it as a good thing or a bad thing. The good part is that they can vet the application before they post it to check and see, number one, does it have any malware or Trojans or viruses in it? Is there anything inside that app that doesn't conform to the general rules and regulations, the, you know, level playing field that everybody is supposed to abide by, and so forth? And that has actually kept most of the apps in the App Store clean. I mean, you can pretty much count that if you're downloading it, it's probably not going to do anything bad to you. So there's a good side to that.
You're listening to Central Standard on 89.3 FM KCUR, streaming live on KCUR.org. I'm Javalani LaFall. We're discussing apps and tablets today and their joint evolution. Our guests are the computer guys, Apple consultant George Costello, and Thomas O'Brien, an enterprise IT consultant and CEO of Ideology Kansas City. Are you a tablet owner? And if so, what's your pleasure on tablets? What kind of tablets do you use? What do you use it for? And what apps do you use on your tablet? Is it a device that's transformed your life, or do you just hold it up when you go out and say, man, I'm really cool? 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. We want to know what tablet you have, why you have it, how you use it. You can also email us at centralstandard@kcur.org. Facebook is also an option, as is at KCURCST, which is our Twitter handle. What types of people use tablets, George and Tom?
I'll tell you right now, 29% of U.S. adults have either a tablet or an e-reader.
Wow, 29% of U.S. adults.
Yep.
In a country of 300 million plus people.
Right, yeah, and most of them adults.
That's pretty formidable.
That's a huge number. And so what type of person? Doesn't matter, anybody.
Depends.
The 29%ers.
Well, you know, also some people, that may be by choice, but other people are compelled to use a tablet for their job. They're rapidly replacing laptop computers. Right. For people who are mobile at all in their job, even if they're not mobile. There's a lot of schools that are using iPads and other tablets for instructional purposes.
And that's interesting. You guys are sort of our resident Justin Long and John Hodgman here, the Mac and PC PC guys on those commercials. You have your iPad, George. And what do you have there, Tom?
I'm sitting here with a Surface tablet.
A Surface tablet.
Yeah, the Microsoft.
The Windows Microsoft Surface tablet.
Right.
Very disparate in character. Why don't you give us...
I left my MacBook in my satchel.
Right.
But why don't you got your smartphone.
That's true.
Why don't you give us a preview of what the Surface tablet is?
Well, the Surface tablet, I've talked a little bit about it before. It's Microsoft's... they built it themselves. It runs a version of Windows 8. And as we said... as many people already know, Windows 8 is designed by Microsoft to be on all of the platforms, smartphones, tablets, PCs, whatever. It's an operating system that's optimized for the touch interface. The thing about the Surface tablet is that it comes with a keyboard, a physical keyboard.
Right.
You can use it without one, and you can get a virtual one, but the physical keyboard is very thin and integrates very well with the device as a cover, so it makes sense to just go ahead and get the keyboard.
And it represents, to use Tom's earlier phrase, a sea change for Microsoft, because up to this point, you know, they were not really in the hardware business. And now we're beginning to see that they're moving into the hardware business ever so slowly.
C.
That's right. C and C.
We're not talking about C++ here, the programming language. We're talking about the actual ocean, the tides of change.
You got it. Yeah.
When you look at a Surface tablet after you've started out, you see a series of tiles. And those tiles can either be static, like with today's date, or just a picture of Internet Explorer, or they can be live, which gives you like a little blurb of news or information.
It's all about customization, though. And before we go to the phones here, let's talk about what's not talked about a lot in terms of tablets. How is the typical support for tablets in terms of fixing them up, in terms of warranties? Is it like PCs, or are tablets gearing us up for the sort of planned obsolescence we're increasingly seeing in the tech world?
I think you hit it right there. A typical PC will come with a 3-year warranty. That's a fairly standard thing. Tablets, 90 days to
a
year.
90 days?
Yep.
Yeah.
They range in price. There's an incredible swing in prices. They go from, you know, $100 to $1,000.
Right, because the shift is to content and web surfing and Internet connectivity and functionality.
Well, it's also
rather
a matter
than the actual hardware.
Yeah, but it's also a matter of quality. There's a certain level of quality that you're going to get at $100 that you won't get at $1,000.
Certainly. Let's go to Matt in Midtown. Welcome to Central Standard, Matt.
How you guys doing today?
Pretty good.
Good.
Go ahead.
Excellent. In our house, we've got the full spectrum of tablets. My wife had the original Samsung tablet that work gave her for a pilot program, and then we both bought Nooks. And then over the summer, I got the newest iPad. Her Nook is straight from the, you know, it's a Nook color, straight from the factory. All that, you know, they lock it down, so you got to buy everything. And I had a friend of mine work some magic and modify mine so it operates as a fully functional tablet. That thing is amazing for everything in the world. It's really inexpensive. I use it for reading, for web surfing. And it's even easier for me to do work stuff on that than it is on the iPad. The iPad seems to be, I'm not smart enough for it. That's the
point. Hey, Matt, can I ask you a question on your Nook? Do you have a dual boot? In other words, do you boot it from like a memory card to do the Android?
I've got, you know, it's full Android. It's Cyanogen 7, which is an old model of it, but it still works fantastic. I have no reason to upgrade the mod and so forth. And by doing that, it's Bluetooth capable and all sorts of good stuff. And for the price, you can't beat that. Whereas the iPad, my vision was to run my presentations on it and all that good stuff, but loading stuff onto an iPad is not as easy as it sounds.
True.
You know, I've got to use Dropbox, which is okay if you have an internet connection. But beyond that, you really can't do much with it. I think you guys said it when those things first came out. It's a product without a market.
Matt,
can't do much. Yes.
Matt, how has using tablets changed the way you converge your technology use and technology access?
I rarely use my actual my physical computer anymore. I mean, unless I have to type out a lengthy email or put together a presentation from scratch, it just sits there. You know, I've got two laptops that are collecting dust because the tablet has rendered those things essentially useless. So I do presentations. Most places have a setup where I grab a thumb drive and plug it in, and life is good. I have moved to that platform. I'm going to say exclusively. You know, there's very, very little that I actually do on my computer itself.
That's a great point in terms of showing the shifting tide or sea change, to belabor a point, to go deeper into it. Will tablets become necessary as the standard, as the computing industry evolves? Will they ever become a must-have, have, or mandatory, compulsory even, in the enterprise world?
Well, probably, yes. No, without a question. It's just, you know, when the PC came about, it was because parts that the microprocessor had been developed and other parts were available that allowed somebody to make a PC. It's similar to with tablets. Tablets would be nothing without the touch screen. So a couple of different technological advances arrived right on time to make the tablet possible, and then people just ran with it.
We're talking about apps and tablets on today's Central Standard, 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. What type of tablet do you use? What type of apps do you use on it? How is it changing the way you compute organically and inorganically? Bodie in Lewisburg, Kansas. Welcome to Central Standard, Bodie.
Thanks. Good morning, guys.
Bodie, do you know that you share a name with a character on The Wire?
I did not know that.
You did not know that. You should look that up.
It's kind of an uncommon name.
And it's a double entendre, too, because, you know, we're talking about wireless stuff and wires and stuff that might end up in Wired magazine, so that's good. Bodie, tell us about your tablet use.
We've got a couple of tablets that we originally got involved because I have a child with a mental handicap, and right. We wanted to find out if he might be able to use it as a learning tool, try to expand his horizons a little bit, mm-hmm. and we found that he can, and it's worked out pretty well. And I have a bunch of kids, and they all enjoy it, but I've got this 1 7-year-old who's able to use it as a learning tool, and it stimulates him mentally. It's been a good thing for us.
It has it sort of been invaluable in that development, something that he can touch?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, kids just seem to get the touchscreen
right.
interface.
I
remember my parents' first computer when I was a kid, and the mouse was kind of a new thing when it came out, and keyboards are a little tricky to figure out when you're a kid, but the touchscreen, my 3-year-old understands it.
Yeah.
He can navigate around very easily.
My 3-year-old has his very own iPad as well. So,
hey, Bodie, how does the sharing thing go? In your family, how's that work?
We have to stay on top of it because we're sharing it between 8 kids. So
wow, Bodie.
Yeah, wow. We give it out in 15-minute increments, and then you can go, you know, clean up your room and come back and talk to me.
Well, Bodie, if you ever get a break from your 8 kids, check out The Wire. Some guy with your name in it.
I'll take a look. Thanks.
Let's go to Jake in Olathe.
Jake, hey there, guys. Great show.
Thank you.
You know, listen to your show for quite a while. First time I've called in. And I'm a bit of a, you know, tech professional. But, you know, as far as my personal use goes, we've got basically the Kindle Fire. And we've got a Kindle DX. And the Fire we actually end up mostly using for Netflix and some games for the kids. They pretty much dominate its usage. I travel a fair amount, so I really got the DX so that I could, you know, read something that's like a book without all the eye strain of having to look into a light bulb that is the computer monitor or tablet monitor. So that's basically what I do. But I, you know, I'm go way back with computers, and we've got a nice laptop that we use quite a bit with the new AMD A series processor, so I can game on my big screen with PC games and, you know, still have all the other things that go along with that. And I guess I wanted to introduce two other things for your guests to discuss. And the first one, I guess, is I kind of see a trend happening with Apple right now that reminds me a lot of what happened to them in the PC market. Where they, you know, basically became so restrictive and expensive that they lost all kinds of market share. I was wondering if anybody else on your panel sees that on the horizon. And I also think right now it's a little bit interesting and a lot of really good marketing because these days you can get basically a laptop with the form factor of a tablet for about the same price as one of the new iPads. And so, because the ultra-thins now are finally, you know, in that same affordable range. And I'm kind of now sitting here wondering why anybody would ever choose a tablet over an ultra-thin laptop. And, you know, I'll just take your responses off the line.
That's a very good question from Jake on the market share with Apple and what happened to Apple's old PC iterations and what's sort of happening now with market share being eked away by other tablets, but not time to call Chicken Little, just yet.
Nope.
Our guests are computer guys, Apple consultant George Costello and Thomas O'Brien, and enterprise IT consultant and CEO of Ideology. We're going to take a quick break. When we return, we wrap up our discussion on tablets and apps and go to the tech lightning round. But speaking of discussion, Kansas City, are you a tablet owner? What's your pleasure on tablets? What kind of tablet do you use? What do you use it for? What apps do you use on your tablet? Questions about which tablet to pick up for Central Standard's own IT help desk, 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Facebook is an option, as is Twitter at KCURCST. Central Standard returns in just a moment. And welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Jabalani LaFall. Bell Labs, the research arm of Alcatel-Lucent, predicts that by the year 2020, consumers in the United States alone will access 7 hours of video each day as opposed to 4.8 hours currently. A lot of this traffic will be on tablets, the report said. The report says this will push broadband networks to the brink. We now continue our discussion on tablets and apps and the world of computing to come. Our guests are the computer guys, Apple consultant George Costello and Thomas O'Brien, who's the CEO of Ideology and an enterprise IT consultant. Kansas City, what tablet do you use and what do you mostly use it for? 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Or you can also tweet us at KCURCST. Facebook is also an option. Gentlemen, this Bell Labs research brings up an interesting point that is very germane to this discussion. Will increased mobile traffic, whether it's on tablets, whether it's on smartphones, whether it's on the convergence between a laptop, a tablet, and a smartphone in one, what does that mean for network infrastructure? What should we be doing to prepare for that eventual bottlenecking?
Building towers like crazy.
Or buying competitors and adding their cell capabilities
well,
to your...
Yeah, and also bidding on spectrum when the FCC has its auctions. There's a whole lot of different things.
Can you say Sprint and Clearwire?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, right.
You know, just when the iPhone came out, it pushed AT&T's network to the very brink. In fact, there were a lot of complaints in some cities, specifically San Francisco, that it was just really difficult to get enough bandwidth to run apps on your iPhone in the very early years. They have since built capacity out, and that's what they're all doing, is building capacity as fast as they possibly can. And I think it's instructive to think of the numbers here. There are 2.5 billion internet users in the world. There are 5 billion cell phone users, of which over 1 billion are smartphone users. That smartphone curve is the hockey stick. You know, it's going straight up. So they're going to replace cell phones over time. You're going to end up with 5 billion smartphone / tablet users. And that's a lot of bandwidth that you're going to have to spend to deal with.
So it's fair to say handsets are a power play in the technology industry.
Right. Say that a little slower.
Power play. I'm going to let that sit for our hockey fans. George, the iPad is really a kind of cool consumer gadget, or at least that's how it's marketed. And, you know, you got people outside of the Apple store coming in. Does the iPad have enterprise and business strength foothold?
Yes. Just as a short answer, I mean, it's just limited only by the inventiveness, the imagination of people. A good example of this is I know American Airlines and other airlines have equipped all their pilots with iPads because, you know, the pilots are required by the FAA to carry around maps of all these airports and so forth, and they used to have these big briefcases. But they're moving to an iPad. Where you can load all the maps on an iPad, and it's smaller, it's lighter, it's easier, it's cheaper. You know, I mean, that's one. Here in Kansas City, the water department just recently announced that they're putting in a system so that their people in the field will be using tablets to monitor whatever it is that they do. And it's just, I mean, it's ubiquitous. I mean, I think Apple has... because they were first in this area and they had the ecosystem to go with the iPad and the iPhone and all of that, it didn't take very long for businesses to figure out some pretty interesting ways to use this technology.
And let's talk about that ecosystem. And by the way, tomorrow there'll be a show on civic technology and how that's used. So thanks for the plug there, George. Speaking of the tech world and the ecosystem, Apple, Microsoft, and Google seem to be the heavy hitters so far in terms of fully integrated suites of products that they're pushing through their tablet interfaces. How does this affect the contentious battle for market share in the tablet sector?
Well, each company wants to maintain some form of control over its various users, and I mean, that's understandable. But Apple was in the fortunate position of already having an ecosystem, if you will. They had the iTunes Store in place, which was a very nice lucky break. I'm not so sure that they designed it that way, that when tablets came along, that all of a sudden they were already prepared to simply add video or TV or movies or apps or whatever else. So they had a leg up on everybody, which has given them an advantage in terms of market share.
But, Tom, Android is slowly chipping away at some of that market share with the Galaxy tablets and its integration with its Android smartphones Chromebooks.
It's not slow. It's very fast.
Right.
Actually, they have more market share than Apple does, but that doesn't necessarily mean they win. There's new players coming all the time. We see that Microsoft is now in the game. So you just have to kind of watch and see how these things develop, but also pick your favorite and go with it. I mean, that's the beauty of competition, is that you get choice.
And we're hearing from people who are picking their favorites and have picked their favorites. Russ in Kansas City, welcome to Central Standard.
Yeah, hello.
Yes, Russ.
Hi. Well, I'm a local area photographer, and what I have an iPad 2, and primarily what I use it for is for a point of sale at various events and craft shows, because what I do, one of my revenue streams is to sell prints and postcards of my photography. And so what I found was that recently, like in the last 6 years, people quit carrying cash at all. And so if you were going to make sales, especially, you know, high dollar sales for things like, you know, I do large prints, you have to have the ability to process credit cards right there. And, you know, while the old, you know, I don't even know what to call it, the old imprint machine was cute and all and sometimes would work great, I have a credit card processor that I won't plug on the air, that I just zip it through a little dongle and it immediately processes.
Thank you very much, Russ. POS is an obvious point of sale, by the way, is an obvious application for a tablet. I've purchased time with a hookah as well as a dress shirt using the POS. The merchant had a tablet for a POS system. So talk about that and how the business community is using other ways to start adapting tablets for a more streamlined use.
Well, you know, there's two PayPal, of course, is now in the POS game along with Square, which is a pretty popular one as well, and there's others to come. It just makes a lot of sense that you reduce the friction. Sales in any kind of sense depends on making a transaction very easy, simple, smooth, frictionless, and then that way the money is out of your pocket before you even know it. Especially if you're not carrying cash, as Russ mentioned, it's kind of, most of us don't carry $500 around with us to buy a print. So having this ability to have a instant, mobile, frictionless transaction is amazing for business.
David in Gladstone, welcome to Central Standard. David?
Hello? Yeah,
welcome to Central Standard.
Yeah. I've never had a tablet or iPad before. I have a laptop, but I'd like to maybe replace my laptop in the future with something else. What I do, I communicate with my wife in the Philippines. She lives in the Philippines, and we use webcam and Yahoo Messenger, but I'm not sure what which would be best as far as a good video and something I can type back and forth on to my wife.
All right, David, that's a good question. Tablet-wise, or should he go with a big laptop, or should he go with a LCD screen attached to a tablet? What's the best option for David?
A couple ideas for David, just, you know, depending on budget. Google Chromebooks, not a bad idea because it has the keyboard and they're relatively inexpensive. The Microsoft owns Skype, so Microsoft owns Skype. So the Microsoft tablet's another idea. you know, a laptop is still a viable device if you're willing to carry around something that weighs a couple of pounds versus something that just weighs one. So some of it, and I think the real important message I would give to anybody looking for these things is take your time, go to a store, try a bunch of them. That's what they're there for, and see which one you like best.
Now, talk about how the iPad and Android and the Nexus tablet and the Surface tablet sort of all play in that ecosystem together. Is it going to be who develops the best apps, or is it going to be the most user-friendly hardware? What's the factor going to be going forward in the tablet wars?
It's not going to be just one thing. That whole universe sort of depends on integration. And a lot of people like the iPad, particularly if they already had a Macintosh computer or an iPhone, either one, because, you know, they're cousins in effect, and they can use the common iCloud storage system or the iTunes store. And then if they download on one device, they can get copies on other devices. So part of it has to do with which universe you like to play in.
I think it's brand allegiance that is what's the a major factor these days. Right now, we don't know a lot of the details, so we go with a brand that we are familiar with and that we trust. However, I think over time, as more different devices enter the market, you're going to have a little less of this, you know, three-way brand allegiance, and that'll break up. It'll be a more vibrant and more competitive market.
What is a sort of red herring game changer in this space, this tablet space?
Well, I'll tell you what I think might be a game changer. You know, the saying in the environment is there's an app for that. I think we're going to get past that relatively soon, right?
Right.
And it's going to be your phone. You know, your phone does this. Why download an app when the phone should manage all that? You shouldn't have to go looking for them. You should just tell your phone what you want, and then it should take care of bringing down the functionality that you need.
And speaking of use, there's interesting research from Nielsen that suggests smartphones are for comparison shopping when it comes to e-commerce, but more people tend to make actual purchases from tablets. Is this because tablets are more like computers and that you tend to make more concrete e-commerce purchases when you're sitting down and panoramically looking at something, where it's easy to flick through
comparison
shopping?
It's easier to type your password in on a tablet.
Right, right. Is that maybe sort of the logic based on that research?
I think so.
Are you more likely to purchase an item or a service or book some tickets on a smartphone or look at it on a smartphone and then sit down at your tablet?
Yeah, you know? I'm probably right in that category. I tend to use the tablet to do those sorts of things. The smartphone, the form factor is small enough that it sometimes is a little bit difficult to use,
right,
especially to type on. So right. I think that's the rationale.
Let's go to Mandy in Kansas City, Missouri. Hello, Mandy. Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome to Central Standard.
Thank you. Thank you so much for taking my call. I love your show.
Thank you.
I was just calling to kind of add to the conversation you're just having. I have both a laptop and a Kindle Fire. And I'm a big reader. I was a little reluctant to go electronic on my books, but I have to say now that I have a Fire, I love that I can travel with like 50 books in the space of one in my bags. So I find that I use the Fire a lot when I travel. I use it for internet access, keeping up with Facebook and everything when I'm gone. But when I'm home, I use the laptop all the time, and I think that's because the functionality of the apps are so different. And I'm wondering if your guest could comment a little bit on this, because I find that when I'm on Facebook on my laptop, number one, it's a lot easier to type on a full keyboard than it is on my little touch screen. But number two, there are things I can do on my laptop, like sharing photos, that the app on the Fire doesn't let me do. So things that I would, like, I share a lot of photos. I like a photo and then I share it with my friends, and I can't do that on the Fire.
Thank you very much, Mandy. She's on the go.
She's right, and she's right on target.
Talk about
you don't even have to respond to what she said. That she is just right where a lot of people are. There are still things that are easier to do on the laptop or the PC. That'll start to go away.
You're listening to Central Standard on 89.3 FM KCUR, streaming live on KCUR.org. I'm Jabalani LaFall. Our guests are the computer guys, Apple consultant George Costello, and Thomas O'Brien, an enterprise IT consultant and CEO of Ideology. We've been talking about tablets and apps, but now it's time for
It's time now for a technology news lightning round with Thomas O'Brien and George Costello.
Well, fellas, let's make it rain here. Starting with local news first, Google Fiber build-out status. Talk about that. What's going on with Google Fiber?
You know, they launched their actual business about a month ago, I guess. They lighted up the Hanover neighborhood. It's going very well. You can look on their blog to kind of see where they are in their build-out. But I think probably the interesting thing to me is that they've had very good success in rolling out and that they are methodically working through their territories.
Is the factor based on demand of these fiberhoods? Is it based on the feasibility of infrastructure based on these old houses and how streets position themselves? What is the factor in the rollout? You mentioned Hanover Heights and KCK is due this winter and Crown Center.
Yeah. It's demand.
Spring. They say it's demand.
Crown Center in spring? Wouldn't there be more demand as a sort of business hub there?
Well, it might be also as a business hub, but there are a lot of people that live in that district.
Right.
And so, you know, I think that they were pretty transparent about the way that they chose those fiberhoods. It was based on the percentage of people that were eager to sign up.
Talk about transparent. Google just hires this futurist Ray Kurzweil, a guy that advocates reverse engineering of the cerebral cortex. And his books are called Singularity is Near and How to Create a Mind.
He takes a lot of vitamins
is
also.
Is Google not spooky enough already?
You know, what's, Google.
I mean, what is
and
it?
And he's going to be director of engineering, too.
Yeah, director of engineering.
The thing that I find so interesting about Google is they're like this giant octopus, and they've got their fingers on all these different things, and they're not afraid to try a lot of what other people might think are just completely pointless projects. So I'm sure they will fund some of his crazy ideas.
They're making him head of engineering.
Oh, yeah.
So they're actually, in essence, saying, we just hired a guy, folks, that is studying the reverse engineering of the cerebral cortex. Now, log on the Gmail.
Kurzweil is an amazing character.
He's a very interesting move. Strategically, what does it mean?
Well, I think it's attracting engineers for Google. You know, there's a big fight for talent, and this is going to really help them secure and attract talent.
Turning to more somber news that no one is anonymous from or immune from.
Yeah.
Anonymous and Westboro Baptist Church of Kansas.
Well, these guys, you know, up in Topeka, who loves to hate everyone, in probably their worst decision ever, announced that they are going to Sandy Hook and picket. You know, as if there isn't enough grief and bad stuff going on there. And the hackers at Anonymous, who I gather have been at odds with Westboro a bit over the years.
Anonymous is at odds with pretty much everybody.
Yeah, everybody. But in this case, it might be good because they took it upon themselves to out the entire, I use the term congregation loosely, at Westboro, but it's available online now. You can find the names, the addresses, email addresses, phone numbers of everybody at Westboro. Plus, they have started an online petition to try to get that church declared as an official hate group.
Now, without getting into the politics of it, this is an interesting aspect of this. What's the typical incursion point for something like this that Anonymous gets into Westboro Baptist Church records?
I'd say they're just outraged.
Oh, you mean how do they get
technologically,
in?
Technologically.
They broke into a database that was probably not very well protected. Yeah. It was probably on somebody's PC, and they just found it.
Speaking of things that go bump in the digital day and night, Citadel Malware continues to deliver the ransomware and attempts to extort money. What's going on with that, Tom?
Well, you know, the FBI has a website now that tells you about cyber threats that they're looking at. And this is one where you'll download the software. It'll be a drive-by. You won't know you got it. And then all of a sudden it sort of blanks out your screen and just says, if you want to use your computer again, you need to send money here. And so it's a particularly vile kind of approach to taking over your computer and not letting you have it back until you've paid them money.
Yeah.
And that's sort of the standard modus operandi for a lot of hackers who want to sell their software back to you and garner money that way, and then garner your credit card information so that they can take it further.
In the old days, they would just kidnap a person. You know, now they're kidnapping your computer.
Then the other thing they're doing is they're purporting to be like a law enforcement agency, and that, you know, a lot of times that'll fool people. So just beware.
Spoofing and phishing is abounding out there. Samsung pushing ahead on flexible plastic displays for production next year. With all the wrangling on patent infringement, with the tablet wars in full force, with the smartphone wars in full force, what is this flexible plastic display set for production next year? What does that mean?
It's the next generation of TV screens or display screens. If it's truly going to be flexible and self-contained, then it has to contain its own backlighting, if you will, although it's not really backlighting. It would be an OLED type of screen, organic LED, which means that each pixel is capable of producing its own light. So with that in mind, then you could print out a sheet, if you will, and you could paper your walls with it.
Raise your hand if you've ever dropped your smartphone and broken the screen.
Screen, yeah.
This takes care of that one pretty fast. So I saw one person over there. But
was he on an organic screen?
Yeah, no LED. So Sony's working on them. Samsung's working on them. I think they're coming in the next couple of years. It'll be really interesting because you'll be able to see slightly curved screens. They won't be the kind that you can like wring up like a wet towel. They'll be a little less flexible than that, but I think the idea is to introduce plastic instead of glass.
Well, that's part of it. The other part is because of the flexibility, it's a gateway to a whole new world. I mean, I don't know if it'll happen in my lifetime, but it's possible that you could be sitting in a room and you could have the ceiling and the walls, you know, made up, and you could literally be in a 360 environment of your own. It would be real.
That happened to me once. Nothing technological about it.
Were you on drugs at
probably
the time?
Probably a bar where that 360 thing happened. Wi-Fox, 4 to 7 times the Wi-Fi performance at busy airports, malls, and conferences. More bandwidth. What's up with that, Tommy?
This is if you've ever been in a convention or a conference and all of a sudden your Wi-Fi goes to zero practically because everybody else on break has jumped into – they're logged onto their tablet or their laptop or something.
And they've overloaded it.
This is a university, North Carolina University innovation that just manages the traffic in such a way that you don't have these big blocks where you lose your connectivity. So it could be a very big thing for sporting events, for any place where lots of people gather.
You know, in a way, that sort of sounds like a managed Ethernet switch, you know, where you just manage the traffic.
Yep, it's exactly like that. It's a very, very efficient traffic manager.
Right. Speaking of managed traffic or unmanaged traffic, an educator wrote 800,000 books that are now on Amazon.
Well, he developed the algorithm and has a patent on it that will allow you to enter a few statements like questions, things that you want to research, and then it just goes out on the net, compiles all the research, and turns it into a book pretty much automatically.
I thought that he was just prolific.
Hardly.
He has writer's cramp probably.
Yeah, because. How does that change content development and how you can put together white papers and plagiarism and copyright?
Copyright would be a real question.
It's there. A little wild right now, but it brings the tantalizing specter of being able to buy a book that isn't even written yet. Like, say, I want a book on name it and bingo. He could develop that book in nanoseconds.
In nanoseconds.
Yep. I think his primary target right now are technical monographs, research, academic research, and that kind of thing where they can pull together that sort of research for people to look at and review.
And, of course, strategic strategy for a global world and global integration.
Right. That
value-added services.
Whatever it means.
Speaking of jargon and robotic language, Apple planning a robotic U.S. factory. What's happened there?
You know, they may already have something that we don't know about because the very first run of these brand-new iMacs that they have come out with, you turn around, the 21-inch was introduced first. You turn it around and you look on the back, it says assembled in USA. So the question is, where? You know, I mean, they're already building them here. They just haven't told us much about it. Apparently, they're going to expand their manufacturing capability, and I'm sure they'll tell us in due time. But and it's not going to be a big deal. I mean, they'll take a small part of their product output and move it, you know, to the U.S. But obviously, if they can do it robotically, it'd be just as cheap to manufacture here as it would anywhere else.
There's going to be one woman at that robotic factory making sure that the robots don't take off with the merchandise.
Right.
Not going to touch that one there. Now, this is a very endemic shift in technology and the flux that it currently is. Research in Motion, the maker of the BlackBerry, dropped from the NASDAQ 100 index.
Yeah.
Ouch.
Well,
yes.
Are we surprised? I mean...
No, nor not surprised. It's not great for a RIM,
nope.
But it's just what happens when you are not fast enough.
RIM is dying a slow death.
Yeah. And that's indicative of that. When you're dropped from an index that measures the performance of tech companies,
yeah.
That's pretty much a death knell.
Yep, I'd say so.
Considering that, you know, they were the main business device up until the introduction of the iPhone.
They used to call it BlackBerry, then CrackBerry, and that's the way technology works.
There you are.
Our guests are computer guys, Apple consultant George Costello and Thomas O'Brien, an enterprise IT consultant and CEO of Ideology. Fellas, thanks for coming.
Hey, thanks a lot.
Yeah, man. It was fun.
And you can hear this show as well as other programs, archive broadcasts, and special features at kcur.org. Tune in tomorrow as we bring you part two of our ongoing conversation about the new American city with Nigel Jacob, co-chairman of the Mayor's Office for New Urban Mechanics in the city of Boston, Massachusetts. We'll talk about civic technology, among other things. Our show is produced by Matthew Long Middleton. Up to Date is next with a discussion, a very timely discussion on gun control. I'm Jabalani LaFall. This is Central Standard. Enjoy your day.